Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Why Lean Process Design Keeps Bronson Buzzing in Southwest Michigan. The presenter is Joe Seestad, Director of Lab Outreach, Bronson Healthcare Group, Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Hi everybody, nice to see you, and good to be back at Executive War College. It's been a little while for me. I am currently working at Bronson Healthcare Group. I'm a lab outreach director, but I have a lean background, and that was really my ticket to entry into the industry about 16 years ago. I started at Cleveland Clinic after about 7 or 8 years in manufacturing, and have been in path and lab medicine the entire time. Though my title is lab outreach director, that means that I'm in charge of our reference lab operation. We're a four-hospital system, and we sell our testing services outside of Bronson, as probably a lot of your laboratories do. So technically, I'm over that, but also I get a chance to use my lean skills quite a bit that I have used through the years to do projects and system-level work there. I work part-time at Bronson as my role. So we're going to be talking about how lean, or why lean, is really an opportunity to keep your lab buzzing, really defined as being able to keep the lab at top notch, being able to not be at risk, I think, to have your laboratory looked at with the type of scrutiny where they might look to outsource and things like that. I think that lean plays a very key role. I want to kind of define what I mean when I say lean. Lean is really a methodology that pioneered back in the auto industry, really with Henry Ford, but then Toyota Production System, and then made its way all through many industries. It's a way to look at any process, no matter if it's manufacturing or healthcare or lab industry or anything, and find where there are wastes that you can look to eliminate and make processes more efficient. So I asked you guys a question in the poll, and a number of you answered. I asked you, are you on a lean journey at your lab? And we had 27 out of 36, so about 75% of you said that you are. So we're in a group here today where a lot of people are sort of on a lean journey. A little bit about Bronson, four hospitals in Southwest Michigan. We are kind of in that, our CEO says we're in a tweener stage, which I would agree. We're kind of too big right now to be acquired, but too small to grow too much more beyond our three counties. If you know Southwest Michigan, a little bit about it, it's a little bit difficult to get to. Once you're over there, you sort of stay over there. So we're far enough away from Metro Detroit in Indiana and in Chicago that we're sort of on our own. About 9,000 employees. We have different ways that we employ medical staff. Some are employed with the hospital and many are private practices, about 750 beds in the system. And we're the largest employer and leading healthcare system in the region there. So a couple of pictures of our lab testing facility. We are located right in downtown Kalamazoo. Kalamazoo prides itself on being a college town, Western Michigan University, Kalamazoo College, also quite a beer industry there in Kalamazoo. So if you know that area, we're right in downtown. We have had the luxury of having a new building go up right in 2020, right in the middle of COVID, we actually launched. And this is a picture of the inside of the core lab area. So you're looking at our automated chemistry and automated hematology area. We have also, this is the other side of that same area in hematology. This is our pre-analytical sorter in the lab that we use. We have for urine cultures, the Kiestra instrument there. So I wanted to talk about the changing dynamics in the lab. Look, you've heard a lot of experts already today talk about what's happening in the industry. Wow, there's a lot of detail in some of those initial talks. I'm not that high level. I kind of bring the cookies on the lower shelves here, so I'm not your expert on compliance or regulatory. I learned several things that I probably won't remember by the time I hit the flight home, but I do see in the lab industry as kind of like, I've had this outside lens for a lot of years on it. I've seen a lot of changing dynamics that are happening right now. The first one is compliance. So we are now, as lab leaders, are being held to the tightest level that we ever have been with regulatory compliance. Our orders have to be incredibly clean on the front end coming in. On the back end, you guys are nodding, on the back end, our results and our billing has to be squeaky clean, and we have to be ready for any random audit that might happen at any given time. Secondly, careers. We are in an industry right now that is facing a shortage of a pipeline. There's fewer and fewer people, as you all know, that want to enter into the healthcare space, especially in key roles like medical laboratory scientists. And we're counting on them for the future. Like, we can't do the work that we do without them. We also are seeing in the industry right now a shortage of capital. Being able to spend big million-dollar investments or multi-million-dollar investments to keep our labs optimized, to invest where it's needed, it's just very tight. We are competing with all types of other service lines to do that. We're also seeing that there's a ton of competition. We are facing in the lab world, if it's not from the inpatient side of the house or if it's not from the ER, we are a shoppable service. And what that means is that consumers now more than ever are able to choose where they go to have their lab testing done, and we've got to compete in that space. So a lot of competition. We're not immune to it in Southwest Michigan. We also see consumerism because of the competition, because of more available, more choices for the consumers. They can pick and choose wherever they want to go. Things are getting more complex. The level of testing, the assays, the reflexes, everything that we're doing is at a higher level than it's ever been. Our C-suite is picking and choosing whether or not they're going to stick with us. They're going to let those deals come in the offices to entertain, to see if they may be interested in taking a huge number buyout of their laboratory to perhaps a commercial lab. For those of you who are in the hospital lab spaces, is mainly what I'm speaking from, that perspective, to go ahead and take over their lab. And in cost, we are under immense cost pressure. So really we have changes and challenges ahead. And I guess what I'd submit to you is, should lean, this idea of being able to reduce waste, should that be a mechanism that we deal with all these changes that are ahead? You know, I wonder, out of the people who said that they're on a lean journey, how many of you have had to defend the lean journey that you're on? Or maybe you've tinkered with it over the years, and you've realized that, like, things come and things go. Lean is a pretty tried and true method to go about a lot of the things that we're talking about here. So I want to go and show you three different ways that lean can be something that you could deploy no matter where you're at in your organization, whether it's not starting the journey yet or you've been doing it for a while. I want to show you three different values that lean could bring to your lab, like today, that you could be working on. The first one is that lean process design, it really absorbs growth. So hopefully you all are becoming really acquainted with the operating income equation, which is really taking revenue minus cost and dividing it by revenue. It's your margins that you're to deliver as a lab. If you're not interested in it, I guarantee that your leaders are. The people that are making decisions on behalf of your lab, they're looking at this. And so when you're looking at operating income or the margin, you can get that number higher one of two ways. You can either do it by cutting costs, or you can do it by absorbing growth. If you have some sort of arm in your laboratory to bring on new testing, then you have the opportunity to absorb growth. And what I want to submit is that lean is a way to help you to absorb growth. What we've seen at Bronson, this is a chart of the past 8 years. We've been able to see volumes, and this is for the entire four-hospital system, all types of tests, whether it's inpatient, ER, outpatient, or outreach, all of that combined, the volume has gone up 42%, and the FTEs have only gone up 21%. So we're growing at a 2-to-1 rate of absorption. We're kind of doing it with mainly existing people. Now, I want to show you how Lean has been our journey to help to do that. So what we did was we spent about 2 months involving about 40 people who work the bench. We're talking people who are the experts at what they do, most of them medical laboratory scientists. And they went out into their own areas and they studied the different forms of waste. Now, we're not saying that people are waste. I'm not saying that that's a wasteful process and somebody's like job is in trouble. But in any operation, you'll find any of these forms of waste. And the acronym that I like to use is TIMWOOD. TIMWOOD. So travel, inventory, motion, waiting, overproduction, overprocessing, and defects. So I did ask you all a question of a few different forms of waste that you tend to see in your laboratories. And here's what came back when I asked you that. I said, what type of waste do you struggle with most in your lab? And the first one was defects. So out of 30 respondents, 17 of you said defects. And I gave the examples of like an illegible order, a missed courier pickup, an amended report, a missing specimen. So defects are any time that something comes out of our process that needs to be redone because it was done wrong the first time. The second place one was variation, different processes, uneven volumes. That's not up here, and I'll show why in just a second, but variation, things that aren't consistent, unevenness. And then the last one, 4 out of 30 said excessive motion or travel, which are these travel and motion, long distances between benches, transporting racks of specimens across the lab. So what we did is we had our frontline people assess their own operation, and they found over 400 wastes. They were able to identify them and say, this step is a step where there's excessive motion, meaning like we have to stoop over, we have to bend to do the work or travel. I'm carrying this specimen clear across the lab, something like that. A defect, because of the way that this work is designed, there's a chance for an error, something going wrong. So with that information, we took and did a before and after redesign study, taking every single job in the lab and pretending that you just put a line right through the tech and looking at distances from their hands. And so what we wanted to do is we felt like if we could get connections really tight, we could get motions really tight, work very close to where it's supposed to be so that they're not walking clear across the lab, that they would become more efficient, they'd be able to absorb that growth that we saw coming forward. And here's what we saw. In the before state, which is the blue lines or blue numbers, half of the work steps to do the work were done outside of 25 feet from the tech's hands at Bronson Lab. So, you know, from me to maybe row number 6, half of the work steps that I had to do my job were done further than that. And then when we made a lot of redesign work, we were able to get 91% of the work steps done within 25 feet and half of them done within 10 feet by doing this motion study. So the way that we had that occur was we started, and this is all done by the techs, and we have dozens and dozens of these, whereas they did that waste analysis. They looked out in their lab. They looked for the various forms of waste. They came back and they drew what's called a spaghetti diagram. It's a lean tool where each one of those lines represents kind of a travel step that I take. And the reason why it's called spaghetti diagram is pretty obvious because it looks like a big bowl of spaghetti when you're done. And this is the one for hematology. And so what they showed is that these are all the steps I have to go do. And, you know, some of these might be 50 feet away that I have to go and do that step. And then what the text did is they spent time with, and they're sitting down at a table right now, but they were taking cardboard and painter's tape and mocking up their new workstations to practice new steps to see how they could reduce some of that waste. So these are things that that you could do in your lab. You know, you could look at a process, and you could start small. And you could have a team of frontline people really empowered to go out and like look where there's opportunity for improvement, doing a waste study, do a spaghetti diagram, and start to mock up what a new plan could be. Now, the neat thing about this is that the voice of the frontline people became the main voice to go into the architects. So why not have the experts who do the work all the time be the primary voice? And then the expertise of the architects comes behind that, and they can take what the lab says, and they can make it into an architecturally strong design. And that's what happened. So we had the techs show the culmination of all their work in a format like this, and then that got submitted to the architects with a whole lot of back and forth for months as we built this new laboratory building. So here's what happens when that comes to life. What happens is, this is the workflow for our inpatient and ER samples. And I hope what you can see from the pneumatic tube over here, tube system, to the bench where the techs accession and bring the samples in, to where they load them on the pre-analytical sorter for the core lab for hematology and biochemistry. These are really tight, crisp connections. We're talking just a few feet so that everything's really close at hand. Now, the reason why this is important is because if you want to absorb growth as the way to cut, you know, to meet the bottom line, I, as the outreach director now who worked with all these frontline techs using lean skills, have a ton of confidence that specimens that we bring in from this window out here, which are coming from our outside providers, I know that whatever number of volume of specimens come out here, which I will talk about in a minute, it's backed up by a really crisp process here that it's not, we're not going to burden them beyond what they can handle because they have such a good operation for the ER and for the inpatient samples. Does that make sense? Just really tight connections. So in lean, what we want to do is we want to try to simplify work so that things are really close together and you have fewer risks of defects and walking around and things like that. The second reason of why I think lean is an approach to help you with the changing environments in the lab industry beyond absorbing growth is that lean process helps to steady out variation. There's in the Toyota production system and Japanese culture, there's three different words that really are associated with the idea of waste. They are muda, which are those seven forms of waste that I showed up there, the Tim Wood. There's muda, which is kind of like I've got the hole in the bucket where there are problems and it's like inefficiencies. There's mura, which is unevenness, where I've got one bucket much bigger than the other. It's where there's kind of variation that's happening, because variation is a very unstable way to run an operation. If your frontline people can't expect what to do next because whatever they look at is going to be sort of unique, that's a tough spot to be in. And then there's one more, overburdening, where we're asking people to perform at a skill level or amount of work that's beyond reasonable. What I want to talk about is this one right here, the unevenness. I think it's a form of waste that's really troubling in the lab world. Think about the amount of effort at the particular skill levels that we have our folks sometimes go through just to discern, like, what is this order actually asking us to do? Or think about how volume comes into the laboratory at different times of day in huge boluses, and other times of day it's very light. That's unevenness. I want to talk about that second one in particular. What we looked at and what we had a desire to do is to look at how our couriers who are bringing samples from all around for us, Southwest Michigan, a lot of them from non-Bronson physician offices and some of them from Bronson draw sites. We wanted to look at how those samples are coming in by time of day and really sorting them out into three different groups of specimens, because not all specimens are treated the same. So what we did is we looked at, by time of the day, which are the ones that we would call easy, or the blue ones. Easy means that it's instrument-ready barcode labels. So when it hits that window coming from the outside, they are ready to go on the instrument with very little extra work. The orange in this we classified as medium. Medium would be those that still require registration in the lab, but they don't require accessioning in the lab. So they have an extra step where we have an in-lab person who is doing registration work, but after that work is done, they can go to the instrument. And then the hard ones, shaded in gray, are those that require both registration and accessioning. It's like a true outside order, not interfaced with us at all. Now, even though these are, they look like they're one-to-ones, it's really like the oranges might be like 5-to-1 as hard as the blue, and the grays are really hard. They might be like 10-to-1. And so what we studied here is that the way our couriers were bringing in samples, we had all this capacity. After the morning draws are done for the floors, things slowed down in the lab from like 7 a.m. till about 11 a.m., where there could have been a lot more samples coming through, and the lab could have kept like a constant flow of testing, knowing that there was a huge bolus about to hit at 11 o'clock, and it did. So at 11 o'clock, we get a lot of easies, which are easier to handle, but it still clogs up the instruments. So, you know, all those capacity studies that our vendor did for the instruments, well, it hits its max at 11 o'clock where you've got things coming from the floor, from the ED, and from outside in a big bolus. So that was one big problem for us right there. The other big problem was over here. We had, even though it doesn't look like much, we had a lot of medium that required registration still in hard. Those required registration and accessioning coming very late in second shift, so late that we realized that we would, if we didn't get to those by the end of second shift, it would go to like a whole different weird process for a third shift. And so we want to find ways to even those two areas out. Here's what we did. Through several, PDCA is an acronym that means Plan, Do, Check, Act. It's the dumbed down version of the scientific method that we all learned back in middle school. So Plan, Do, Check, Act, it's where you think about what you're going to do, you actually do it, you check the results, and then you make adjustments. We went through a series of 7 Plan, Do, Check, Act cycles where we went to hourly routes versus every other route for some groupings of our clients. We looked specifically at pathology and how that was coming in, tissue. We looked at making visual controls. We looked at our whole region and did some groupings of getting those routes more streamlined and several other improvements. And what that yielded to us was some improvements, and we're still doing some more. One, it bumped up the easies up about an hour, so you started to fill in. These runs were getting more in 7, 8, 9 o'clock, which is really good for us, bringing more of the easy specimens in sooner in the day. Also, though, and this is probably the biggest impact that we've heard, very positive benefits from the people working in the lab, is that we've got the hards coming in sooner and then fewer later in the evening. What that has done is it's made the work in the lab much simpler, and it's gotten data on the patient's chart by the end of second shift versus sometimes kicking into wee hours of the night or the next day. One more, and I'll wrap up. And so we've talked about how lean can really help a lot with these changing dynamics. It'll help you absorb growth, looking at where there's those inefficiencies. It's going to help to steady out that unevenness. And then here's one more. It's going to help to promote innovation. Simon Sinek has a quote that says, innovation is not born from the dream. Innovation is born from the struggle. Here is was our problem, at least one of them. So we did the Epic Beaker upgrade a year and a half ago, and it was very difficult for us. A lot of decisions were made by a lot of people who weren't lab folks prior to lab getting their hands on it. You could call it the lab's fault, but it was hard. We had to kind of take what we were given. So before we made that shift to Epic Beaker, it used to be that your physician office would place, the provider would place an order, and then the result would come through, and it would go back to that provider, no matter where that provider was at. That one provider might be at this clinic some days, this clinic in other days, but it went back to that provider. With Epic Beaker, we had to now figure out a way to get it to that provider at that specific clinic. For those who have dealt with that, it was creating a submitter error. The clinic that it's at is the submitter, and it was creating a ton of burden on our phlebotomists because our process was that they were the ones that had to figure all that out. We did a current state value stream map or process map, and it's really kind of looking at that, what happens really down here. The phlebotomist, it says orders, but really what they're doing is they're confirming an order. So when they're looking at like an outside rec, that patient walks up to their draw site, they're having to discern what was actually ordered and where did these results go. And what was happening is they were having a potential error of picking the wrong tests, and it was adding that complexity of the submitter into their decision point. Now we're talking entry-level people in the healthcare arena having to make that call. So what we did is we got a team together, and we did the first improvement, the first Plan, Do, Check, Act. And we said, let's get clients to send in their orders ahead of time. So what we did is we notified many of our clients of a central fax number, and one registration FTE was dedicated to that. And what we found out was we just made the whole problem worse. The offices weren't using the central fax. The patients were showing up too soon before we were doing work on the back end that we shouldn't have. And the patient wasn't right in front of us. So it was really that waste of overprocessing and defects. Then we did another plan, do, check, act cycle. We took four draw sites and we created a central ordering process. So here's what happens. The provider generates that lab order. And if it's an outside rec, the patient is greeted, but then they kick to a separate process where there's a central ordering group. It was all existing FTE. It was our client services, our phone room. These are people who are trained in all of the lab tests. They know how to add on tests. They know how to discern tests very well. They can call an office. They are placing those tests, and then the patient access groups register the patient. We're getting the lab order right the first time by doing that. So we looked at things like submitter errors and wait time for patients in the flow, and all of those metrics improved as a result. So we kept going through. We expanded from 2 to 4 sites, then 4 to 8, then up to 12, and now we're looking at ticket scheduling in Epic. Lots of time committed to it, about a year worth, in a lot of people's time, but we are still buzzing because we are able to get clean orders on the front end. So in summary, 3 things I talked about is that really lean workstation design can be a method that you use to simplify that work. How do you get reaches close to people's hands? How do you bring the work in close to them? We also saw that variation, like the way that the volume comes in, is just as problematic as other forms of waste. That just because it's so foundational, if you've got unsteadiness of how things look coming in, that could really hurt, and that's worth improving. Being comfortable with knowing that you're not going to get it right the first time, so go through the practice of plan, do, check, act. You know, trial things out. Be okay with an experiment as long as you have controls around it. Really, innovation, it helps to prompt lean to kick into gear. If you don't have a burning platform, if you don't have a struggle, if you don't have somebody wanting to see things happen differently than they ever have, then really the lean thinking has no real catalyst to it. So we want to get innovation to kick that into gear. And then I highly recommend to process map, draw boxes with arrows showing how things go when you have a complex process. It makes a complex process appear much more straightforward. You can start to diagnose how to make it better. So my question for you is, what's the next step, or maybe for some of you, the first step that you can take on the lean journey? And with that, I will open it up for thank you, and I'll open it up for any questions that you have.
Did your volume go up or down in the last 12 months?
In the last 12 months?
As you were going through the process.
Yeah. Did the volume go up or down in the last 12 months since we were going through the process of what I just showed right there? It went up, and I would say that, do you think that it would, because the process work that we are doing, I don't see any correlation between volume increasing or decreasing? Or
I was wondering, because you improved your situation.
Oh.
Improving with the increasing volume is even better.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah. It's going up. Yeah, we've been growing at about 5 to 7% year on year. Our outreach is growing more, outreach and outpatient, however you define that in your labs. Inpatient's pretty steady, ERs, up a bit, but outpatient outreach has been going up.
And does the actually help you selling it to the clinics when you can insure?
You bet. You bet. Here's why. I have a sales and marketing team that work with me, and but I have this operations background and this lean background. So I promised to our lab leadership and my colleagues that, hey, we're not going to bring in testing at a rate that's going to overburden you until we fix process. So we've been able to have this tight collaboration with the lab that we've got to make sure that we can absorb growth confidently. But now that we know that we can, we know how to sell. I mean, our market's pretty confined, and we've got decent market share. So there's not like a ton of growth, but we know that as more testing comes in, even through existing clients, we have the ability to absorb that. So absolutely. Thank you.
I have a question on the clinics. Are they connected to Epic Beaker?
So the ones that are Bronson-owned, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, are Bronson-owned, but a lot of our providers are you know, separate. They're independent. Some of them are on Epic, and so they're part of the Epic community. We're able to use, like, Community Connect as our solution there. It still does require us, though, to do extra work when those samples come in. But yeah, and then true external ones, they'll either be on paper order and not interfaced, or we use Atlas often as a connectivity between us and them.
Those that are on paper, are you standardized in your requisition?
We are, but because they're still on paper, you've got that doctor who you can't even read their writing, right? And so, but yes, they are standardized recs for most of our clients. Yeah, we don't get the true, like, on the back of a napkin order very often anymore. Chris?
So, Jill, because we're involved with, you know, activating and relocating laboratories across the U.S., and seeing firsthand what you did with Bronson when we opened the facility, we certainly understand the value of it. But we're running into more and more clients that from either an architecture perspective, during design, mm-hmm. or the owners themselves, that say, you know, look, my lab people are very busy. We don't necessarily want to involve them in the process because their time is very valuable, which obviously is a very short-sighted thing to do,
yeah.
because you're going to build a laboratory that's going to be there for the next 15 or 30 years.
Right.
So how would you say, what are some approaches to try to facilitate that? Because we're seeing a lot of that across the country. They just don't want to have the involvement of the people that are actually doing the work on a daily basis. So how do we best emphasize that or approach that, or any resources to direct them to get them to understand the true value of what it has is, from an operations and an execution perspective?
Yeah, anytime that you're doing a building project, you want your voices from the front lines to be the loudest ones. I like to say fingerprinting instead of finger pointing. So you want people who are touching those samples, doing the testing. You want their voices in there. So that comes down to their involvement in the lean design on the front end. But it also comes down to their involvement as you get ready to transition and actually pull the trigger to move physical spaces if you ever find yourself in that opportunity. So getting folks to be involved in that transition planning, which is what Chris is talking about. It's part of what his company does, and they've worked with me, the labs I've been at a couple of times, super valuable because you've got your techs now having a ton of comfort knowing exactly where every piece of equipment is going to end up going in that new building that they're in.
I might add that just the buy-in, right? If you don't have them involved up front, you can't expect buy-in. And that's your argument to management. Say, if you want your folks to really embrace this, they need to be involved.
Yeah.
Well, it's a sure dissatisfier in the end, because ultimately you build something that doesn't work functionally for your staff get frustrated, staff leave. I mean, it's like a perfect waterfall diagram of what not to do.
Right.
But we're seeing it on the hospital side, we're seeing it on the clinic side,
sure.
the laboratories that we're doing, and it's all stemming from, hey, we're short on staff, or our people's time is very valuable. We don't want to take 6 or 8 hours out of their month. And I'm like, look, 6 to 8 hours might net you, it might save you tens, hundreds, millions of dollars in the end in the states and areas that you've got to go back and rectifying and building that's already constructed.
Yeah. Satisfaction too, right?
It's generally a pretty good idea.
Employees always satisfied.
Especially.
Hands down, yeah. That's
the goal. They're not going to be satisfied, you end up losing.
It's generally a pretty good idea, especially for any project work, especially for things that are going to change a person's job, to get them involved on the front end. What I've just really enjoyed is that lean really does offer that. Doing like something like a spaghetti diagram or a a time and motion study or a waste analysis. Usually the techs eat that stuff up because they want to see their job get improved. Yeah. Other questions?
Yeah. I have one. Your Atlas Outreach clients, are you printing a specimen ready barcode, by the way, in your order?
I wish. Yeah. I wish. No.
So you relay them when they get there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What percentage of your outreach is coming from?
Of a percentage of samples that are coming in from that window, so I'm excluding inpatient and ER. I'm only including true like outreach and outpatient that couriers are going to get. Around 10 or 12% are Atlas bidirectional or results only interfaces right now still. Yeah.
Do you have your own courier service or do you outsource?
Yeah, so we have our own courier service that services Southwest Michigan. So that means that we're responsible for all the staff, all the vehicles, all the maintenance, all the routes. I've worked in both models. Bronson really values the quality of having the folks that are part of your system to do that work. I've seen systems work where it's outsourced, and I've seen actually really good areas that have done that. But yeah, we're really dedicated to having our own people do that.
So if your couriers are part of your system, then that CAP standard applies that said you have to track the specimens from collection all the way to the
yeah.
city. So your specimens that are not collected using an EMR or any kind of Epic system, how do you track those specimens coming from those clients?
No, that's a pretty technical question that I don't know. I don't know all the details of that answer. I do know that we record in our LIS all of that information when it comes into our laboratory, which is why for the true externals, it does take more time to go through that accessioning work. So, but we're getting what is given to us on that valid order coming in. If it's not a valid order, we have to be, you know, work with the provider that sends it to us to make sure that they are giving us an appropriate order that has all the information. Yeah, any more than that, I probably would have to go to another expert in our lab to get a better answer. Which I'd be happy to do if you have more technical questions there.
Sure. Yeah. We're not meeting it either.
Okay. Other questions? All right. Thanks for attending.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.